And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. More than 130 people died in Ohio over the past year in cases connected to domestic violence. That's according to the Ohio Domestic Violence Network. It reports a 62% increase in those deaths over the past 2 years. In Cincinnati, domestic violence numbers are also trending upward, according to Kristen Shrimplin, president and CEO of Women Helping Women. Advocates hope bills pending in the Ohio State House could protect victims. Aisha's Law, or House Bill 3, would require police to do a lethality assessment on a domestic violence call. So let's talk about it. Joining Cincinnati Edition to discuss the rise in domestic violence cases is Ohio Domestic Violence Network Policy Director and Staff Attorney Michaela Deming. Michaela, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
We also have with us Women Helping Women President and CEO Kristen Shrimplin. Kristen, welcome back to our show.
Thank you so much.
If you have questions or thoughts or comments, give us a call, 513-419-7100, or email talk at wvxu.org. Kristen, we've talked on this program, I believe, at least twice, maybe three times, since the pandemic took hold more than 18 months ago. Is the domestic violence situation worsening?
It is. You know, it's been clear to us. We're, what, 18, 19 months into the pandemic. But the gender-based violence has always been an epidemic, right? A public health epidemic. And it really got ignited last year. And it's only continued this year. You know, and we predicted that this would happen as we closed out last year. And we were looking in January at what our strategies were going to be and what we needed to do with our workforce to build it up in order to get out into the community to respond. And here we are in October, Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I'm sad to report that the predictions have come true. Gender-based violence has continued, and it's continued to escalate.
When we talked last year during the pandemic, when most things were still remote or virtual, we were still living a pretty lockdown lives. It was explained that people are put in volatile positions because the partners are at home together more than maybe they used to be. What's happening now? Because there is more opportunity for people to be away from each other, a little bit of more normality, returning to offices, for example, or having social opportunities. What can you tell us about what's different regarding this year in the pandemic compared to last year, Kristen?
You know, what's different, you know, I don't know if it's that different, right? So the conditions have changed in terms of, you know, we're not in stay-at-home orders, right? So that's true. That's gone away. But what hasn't gone away is the increase in what we call lethality indicators, right? The increase of the use of violence that partners who claim to love their partner are utilizing against them. That has continued to escalate. You know, it's shocking, and I'm sad to say that it's shocking what we're seeing. And, you know, to what Ohio domestic violence put out across the state, we're seeing it in this region around domestic violence and intimate partner violence, homicides. Those have continued to escalate. So I'm not sure that I have a really good answer for you on what is happening and why abusers are choosing to continue down this path. I do know that systems, we are all trying to collaborate as quickly and as best as possible. But the climate has changed considerably.
131 domestic violence fatalities in Ohio as of June 30th. That's a 20% increase in deaths over the same period last year, 62% increase from 2 years ago. That's according to a report from the Ohio Domestic Violence Network. That organization's policy director and staff attorney, Michaela Deming, is also with us. Michaela, these statistics are, of course, troubling. What can you tell us about the situations and the people behind those numbers?
Yeah, so we have some trends that we saw in the numbers from the past reporting year. And there's a lot that we don't know, frankly, in the way that we do count those statistics at this point. So we had 15 young people killed, which is the highest number since we began reporting. Those were situations where we had complete family annihilations in the past year. So a husband, father would kill the wife, mother, and all of their children in a single incident using a firearm. And so that accounted for one case where there were five deaths, two cases where there were four deaths. So that accounted for some of that. We did have, we had a number of situations where there was a prior domestic violence charge or conviction. So we knew we, being society, had indicators that there was a problem in the home, and the fatality occurred. We also saw a really disturbing number of cases. At least six of them were offenders, alleged offenders under the criminal system, who had been charged with a domestic violence related offense, were out on some sort of pretrial release, and the fatality occurred in between court hearings. So that was one trend that we noticed. You know, it's a real one of those places where we see opportunity, right? We can see an opportunity for systems were already involved. How can we improve our response? You know, we had incidents like that. We had incidents where the homicide or the suicide occurred when there was an altercation, and then the offender was killed by law enforcement or chose to take their own life. We see that each year. So you'll see that out of the fatalities, we had 68 male fatalities and 26 deceased perpetrators. And so we see that these deaths are not only the folks that we would identify as the victim of the domestic violence, but a lot of offenders are also taking their own lives, or law enforcement is intervening and taking those lives.
Kristen Trimplin is president and CEO of Women Helping Women. Kristen, tell us more about what's happening locally in the Cincinnati region. I know that you had reported previously that so far, I guess, between January and September of this year, there have been a total of 19 domestic violence and intimate partner violence homicides in the city alone?
Correct. That's the reporting we saw when the chief of police was reporting to city council. And so that's quite alarming to all of us in this region, right? And it amplifies and echoes what Michaela was talking about on the statewide level. What we're seeing specifically at our agency, so we're a community-based agency 24/7, and we show up and we support survivors, whether that's on scene, hospitals, courtrooms, campuses, hotlines, et cetera. We are continuing to see an increase in need demand from survivors in our services. So, for instance, when we go on scene with law enforcement this time, you know, right now compared to last year, we're trending around a 30% increase. Now, I will say part of that is, you know, good news, because that means we are working with more law enforcement partners. And I know when we listen to these statistics, specifically around homicide, it's heartbreaking. It truly is. And as we're talking about the intersectionality between gender-based violence and, you know, the ongoing pandemic, it can feel powerless. But I want to be really clear here. And Michaela, you know, intonated to this when she used the word opportunity. We do not have to feel powerless in this, in our region. We do have the power to collectively pull different levers at systems. For instance, with law enforcement, where we are expanding our partnerships with them. That will result in serving more survivors, connecting them to safety. Hopefully, that will, in the future, we'll see a reduction in homicides, right? And we have other levers that we can pull in making sure that, you know, we're doing more responses to court right now. Our hotline is up again, just like it was last year. You know, so if we can look within this region and enact victimless prosecution as a practice, as a norm, perhaps that's going to change some of the outcomes that survivors are experiencing. You know, maybe in this region, if we're like Franklin County, and we enact a high risk team of different systems getting together, we can really create a blueprint for this region. So we can get on the other side of these numbers. Well, I just don't believe it has to be this way.
Speaking of numbers, Chris, and I understand that your organization, Women Helping Women, has seen a significant cut in funding from the Victims of Crime Act. You reported over the past 24 months that funding has been cut by 71% at your agency?
That's absolutely correct.
So what does that mean for the work that you do?
Oh, it's devastating. So the Victims of Crime Act, that funding that comes into our agency and agencies like us is really directly mapped to showing up and serving survivors, right? So that goes to our advocates' salaries. It goes to our ability to give client assistance for survivors we serve in order to travel to get to the survivors we serve. It's frontline work. That's the nature of it. So any agency that gets a 71% cut from one of its largest funders, we had to do a course correction. So it's devastating in terms of last year. We had to make sure that we didn't let staff go. We just weren't going to do that during a pandemic when there's rising need. This year, I'm really grateful to this region of other entities showing up and helping us with that stopgap funding, because we literally yesterday got the notice of our cut from VOCA, and we were anticipating it. But that is a trajectory that absolutely has to go a different way.
Michaela Deming is Policy Director and Staff Attorney at Ohio Domestic Violence Network. Michaela, are other organizations seeing a cut in funding the same way Women Helping Women is?
Absolutely. It's statewide. It's actually national that we saw the decrease in VOCA funding. And we can trace that back to the federal government. There was a change in the style of prosecution. And what ultimately ended up happening was that when federal prosecutions were happening, instead of fines and fees and penalties being directed into the crime victim fund at the federal level like they're supposed to, because federal prosecutors were using something called non-prosecution agreements, right? We'll all walk away as long as you pay these fines. Those were actually going to General Treasury instead. So we lost millions and millions of dollars desperately needed for victim services because they were being rerouted. Now, I am really happy to say that there was a VOCA Fix Act that was passed just not too long ago. So that is going to be corrected. But we're looking at another year or two, unfortunately, where our programs are going to continue to feel this crunch while the Crime Victim Fund recovers from several years worth of not getting the critical funding that it needed to then distribute to the states. So every program around is unable really to step up and fill any of those gaps because they all got the same, you know, dramatic funding cuts over the past 3 years.
We will continue this conversation just ahead, including a conversation about Aisha's Law, House Bill 3. It would require police to do a lethality assessment on a domestic violence call. A little later in this program, we look at how pharmacy benefit managers drive up the price of prescription drugs. The three largest processed 77% of all prescription claims last year and racked up hundreds of billions of dollars in revenue. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our conversation about a tragic trend during the pandemic, a significant rise in domestic violence cases and associated deaths. We're joined by Ohio Domestic Violence Network Policy Director and Staff Attorney Michaela Deming, as well as Women Helping Women President and CEO Kristen Shrimplin. We'll take your calls at 513-419-7100 and your emails at talk@wvxu.org. Michaela, I want to talk a bit about House Bill 3, which apparently was brought up in a previous session of the State House in Columbus, did not move forward. It's been reintroduced this year. It's also called Aisha's Law. It would require police to do what is called a lethality assessment on a domestic violence call. Could you help us understand what that means?
Absolutely, yes. House Bill 3 did pass out of the House in the last General Assembly, but did not cross the finish line with the Senate. It is going to be having another hearing, we believe, on Thursday of this week, and might get a vote out of committee just this week. So Aisha's Law does a number of things. One of them includes this lethality assessment. As Kristen was mentioning earlier, this idea that we have lethality indicators, or we have, you know, decades of research at this point, which tell us that the existence of certain things, certain factors in a domestic violence relationship let us know that the possibility that there will be a fatal incident in that situation is higher a likelihood. And so the way this would work, some counties are already doing this, but law enforcement on the scene would do a quick yes, no questionnaire style thing. It's about 10 questions, again, all based in research. If at the end of that questionnaire, the person is rated high risk for a lethal outcome, then law enforcement will be making a direct referral to a program like Kristen's, like Women Helping Women, right there, with, you know, Kristen's folks being on the scene, the advocates, or being able to connect with an advocate at that point so that we can try and get services more directly to victims at the scene of the crime, with law enforcement as the conduit there.
Kristen, I believe when we spoke before on this program, you talked about how we were seeing one of the factors in why we were seeing an increase in domestic violence cases was because the partners were at home together, and that prevented phone calls to organizations like yours. I'm wondering if this lethality assessment also faces challenges because it does require a certain amount of honesty from someone in a very volatile situation. Could you talk about that?
Sure thing. You know, and I think that's where it's really unique with what we're doing in Greater Cincinnati, in Southwestern Ohio. We have our DIVERT team, which just stands for Domestic Violence Enhancement Response Team. We've been around working with law enforcement on that since 2018. And what it does in this region is it allows quick activation. So once police are dispatched on a 911 call for domestic violence, they go out, they assess the scene, they then directly dispatch our advocates. And we go out and we respond on scene. Typically, we get there within about 17 to 20 some minutes. That is really game changing because we've already done the protocols, we've done the trainings between law enforcement and with ourselves so that survivors are getting connected quickly, as well as their children, to an advocate. Because the truth of the matter is, when we talk about these lethality assessment and lethality indicators, that's exactly what we're seeing on scene with our DIVERT unit. You know, we saw a real spike last year. Unfortunately, it's continued this year with high rates of strangulation. Over 50% of survivors we show up to on scene have experienced strangulation. High rates of being threatened or a weapon being used against them. And over 80% of, you know, the folks that we show up on scene to, the perpetrator has already threatened to kill them, their children, or themselves, right? So when we talk about lethality indicators, those are a few of those examples. I would love it if in the state of Ohio, every agency like us had the funding and the partnership with law enforcement so that when law enforcement goes out, an advocate goes out. We are currently doing that with 15 jurisdictions in the region, and it's quite remarkable.
Michaela, I'm wondering if the general public, people who might be neighbors or loved ones of someone in a situation that could lead to domestic violence, would also benefit from understanding lethality indicators. Is that something that's available to people?
Yeah, so the lead researcher is Dr. Jacqueline Campbell on most of the lethality research. It is available. You can actually go on to her website and you can take the course that's available online to become certified in one of these lethality assessments. There are a couple of other versions of that as well. But as for neighbors and bystanders, I want everyone to know that programs like Women Helping Women, all of our domestic violence programs, those hotlines are available to friends and family members also who are concerned about situations that they're seeing or hearing and want to talk about how best to get resources in a safe way to those friends and family members, how best to talk about it. So I would encourage anyone who is interested in learning more about it, please feel free to reach out to our programs. They are there for you also, because we know that you are more likely to have somebody talk to you, figure out if you're a safe person to talk to or to be part of someone's safety plan. And so we are happy to chat with you about what those things look like and what types of interventions might be available.
If I were aware of a situation like this, but also understood the volatility that if a violent partner would become violent if they knew someone was possibly looking into it, how would I proceed?
Yeah, I think this is, again, an opportunity for you as the third party to reach out to one of our programs and talk about that. Law enforcement is not, unfortunately, the best answer for everyone in our communities. We know about that not every community based on race or socioeconomic class feels as comfortable calling law enforcement to address a situation. Not everyone feels comfortable going into shelter. And so really talking through with an advocate what some other things you could do to support someone and protect your own safety is a really great way to start that conversation to figure out how you might be able to be a resource, a support for that person, because it might be that they do or do not want you to call law enforcement or for the kids to be able to come to your apartment or to your location. If something is happening, that might be part of a safety plan, for example. But starting that conversation with an advocate would be a really great way to start and begin that conversation about what the possibilities might be.
That's Michaela Deming, Policy Director and Staff Attorney at the Ohio Domestic Violence Network. We're also joined by the President and CEO of Women Helping Women, Kristen Shrimplin. And Kristen, I know that advocates like you are keeping an eye on Aisha's Law, House Bill 3 in Columbus, but legislation can often move at a snail's pace. I'm wondering, what are you hoping for in the immediate term to aid your efforts to help survivors of domestic violence?
That's a really nuanced and great question. You know, I would say in the immediate term, I'm going to make it very, very simple because gender-based violence, it's so common, it's so complex, it's so consequential. Sometimes we have to make it extremely simple. So if you're a listener and someone discloses to you that they're experiencing some unhealthy dynamics or perhaps the verbal abuse has gone to some physical abuse or perhaps some sexual assault has occurred or you're seeing stalking. If someone is disclosing that to you, you have true power in that moment to simply hold that space, tell them that you believe them, tell them that you hear them and there is help available if they want it. So give that power of choice and autonomy back to them, because that gets stripped away from survivors every single day during gender-based violence. And so I think what we can collectively do, an immediate sense of urgency, is when loved ones, coworkers, friends, neighbors reach out to us, that we listen, we validate, and then connect them to experts. We don't have, you know, if we're in the general public, you don't have to be the expert. You just have to be the conductor for holding that space and two resources.
And Michaela, in our last minute together, I would ask the same of you. What are you hoping for in the immediate term?
I think Kristen's answer was phenomenal, of course. But we are also always looking for additional resources. We have programs that are looking for staff and volunteers. If you have time, if you don't have time, but you have a little bit of extra money, we could always use funding. As we mentioned earlier, we are experiencing dramatic funding cuts Our programs are incredibly resilient. They have stayed open through all of the pandemic and the changes that we've been seeing over the past 18 months and longer. But we can't do that work without the support of the community. You can reach out to us to provide educational opportunities to your local community group, your religious group, your school, any of those places. So getting the word out, but also if you're able to step up and help, we would love to have you join the movement as well.
That's Michaela Deming, Policy Director and Staff Attorney at the Ohio Domestic Violence Network. We've also been joined by Kristen Shrimplin, President and CEO of Women Helping Women. Kristen, Michaela, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.